Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Let's say that you wrote the perfect program. It's progressive, it's individualized, you're using research to make your decisions, and your client looked at it, they maybe crossed their arms, and they told you that, hey, their buddy down at the big box gym said that squats are not, you know, good for their knees, they should be doing like a hack squat or a Smith machine. Or maybe it's the one who ghosts you every 3, 4, 5 sessions, the one who maybe texts you even at like 11:30, 11:45, midnight, and is looking for a form check and expects an answer back by the morning before their next training session. Or maybe even the one who turns every session into a therapy appointment that you don't feel like you got paid for. And quite frankly, you kind of get tired of hearing about it. And here's the thing that we generally don't hear when it comes to the education side of training people is that the most expensive skill in this entire industry is not actually going to be programming. It's not going to be anatomy. It's not going to be your periodization. It's going to be interacting with people. And we get tested on absolutely none of it when it comes to our communication skills of how we operate within the business side of personal training, strength and conditioning, sports performance, what have you. And so today, I want to try to help us reframe this and stop using the word quote unquote or phrase, I guess, quote unquote, difficult client, because I want to show you that those two words are quietly possibly causing you retention, revenue, and maybe even your own mental sanity. And I'm going to hand you here a 5-step system that the best coaches in the world use to turn the hardest clients into the ones that many times happen to stay the longest and even maybe potentially refer you other clients. So let's get into it. Welcome back to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley, and this show is aimed at strength coaches, personal trainers, and any kind of fitness enthusiast looking to level up their program design, their periodization, their business. If it involves strength and conditioning, personal training, or overall just enjoy being in the weight room, I assure you my podcast is for you. So if you happen to like the episode, do me a favor really quick, hit the like button over on YouTube if you're watching over YouTube. If you're not, you can subscribe over there where I drop the video side of things as well. Or you can always leave me a 5-star review over on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, or wherever you happen to be enjoying this podcast episode. All right, so difficult clients, let's get into the episode. Now, if you happen to type how to deal with difficult clients into any kind of coaching form or Google machine or ChatGPT or whatever, you're going to get the same two pieces of advice essentially on a loop here. And you're going to have the first camp that's going to say that the client is the problem, that they're a red flag, they're not coachable, you should fire them and protect your peace and your space and, you know, overall, maybe even some clients that maybe not like being around this person. The other camp is going to say the entire opposite, that you, the coach, are the problem, that you didn't build a good enough rapport, you're not good enough with your communication skills, you just need to work harder at that and they will come around. And here's why both camps, in my opinion, are not correct. And it's, you know, he's going to be with a grain of salt, I guess. So just take that for what it's worth. But they both treat the word difficult as a verdict and a label that you happen to put on a living, breathing human being, calling them a difficult client. It could be an easy client. And if that was a fixed trait, right, like an eye caller, that's not exactly the way that works. So we can reframe this and look at positives and take things away and draw things away and figure out how we can actually make that difficult client maybe a great client. And it's not going to be just this black or white, because difficult is not a person, it's a behavior. And a behavior is the single most useful piece of information that a client can actually hand you, because behavior is always going to point at a cause. And so when you label the person, you stop looking for the cause. You basically close the file down and say, hey, this is just a difficult person. I'm not going to move on. And the moment that you close that, then you've lost the ability to actually coach them. So here's the way I want you kind of want you to rethink this for the entire episode as you're listening, is that difficult at the end of the day is data. And every difficult behavior is a symptom. And our job here in this episode today is to learn how to read the symptom of the difficult client, find the cause, and then respond to the cause instead of reacting to the symptom that we have. Because reacting to the symptoms is how you lose your clients at the end of the day. So diagnosing these causes is how we're going to try to keep them, but also then get them to hopefully give us referrals as well at the end of the day. So let me give you the layout here that's going to make this relatively concrete, because difficult is data is a nice slogan, I guess, for us to go for here for this episode, I guess. But if you need somewhere to put the data, that's how we're going to use it. But back in the late 70s, a psychologist named Edward Borden described what he called the working alliance, the actual working relationship between a helper and the person that they're helping. And he said it rests on three important things. Number one is going to be the bond. Do they trust you and feel like you're on their side? The second one is going to be goals. Do you both actually agree on what you're working towards? And the third one is going to be tasks. Do they agree that the specific things that you're asking them to do are the right way to get there? So we have the bond, we have the goals, and we have the tasks. And here's why this is important. Almost every single client or difficult behavior that we're having to work with that you'll ever see is one of those three things that are not being supported, or there's a pitfall in. There's a leak somewhere in either the bond, the goals, or the task. So the client who argues with your program, that's a task disagreement, okay? They don't believe that the method works, even though maybe you know that it does. They don't mentally believe that it does. Maybe the client who won't commit to X amount of days per week or the duration that you're trying to get them to commit to often has a goals problem. So you're chasing two different finish lines in terms of what you believe they need to do and what they actually think that they're going to need to do it. And then a client who feels cold and combative, that's usually going to be a bonding issue. So, you know, their trust is not quite there. You know, maybe there were weeks ago that there was something that came up that broke their trust. And the difficulty is just the symptoms showing up now as you have this quote unquote difficult client in front of you. And so instead of asking, why is this person so difficult, we really should be asking a much better question: which one of these three pillars is broken or has a leak or is not working optimally? Is it the bonds, the goal, or is it the task? Maybe it's even two of them. But the question alone will change how we coach this individual, because now you're not defending your ego or necessarily labeling theirs as the difficult client. We're diagnosing where the issue is. We're going to dive into that. And then we're going to try to focus that on our coaching side so that way they feel supported. And then they're not going to necessarily feel quote unquote difficult anymore. And so I want to put this into practical sense, as I always do with all my podcast episodes, because you're not going to coach, you know, somebody that's got this broken system in their three pillars of how they are going to build a relationship with a coach. You're not going to be able to coach that person very well. You know, you coach the actual human that's in front of you. And so you want to make sure that those are supported, but in the right ways. And obviously you're going after the right one, right? So, you know, we've broken down the difficult client here into six archetypes that you should be able to recognize relatively immediately. And for each one of these archetypes, I'm going to tell you which one of these three things is usually breaking or has a pitfall or there's an issue in, because that's the part that's going to be important in terms of how we're going to patch it, repair it, you know, build it up so that we can get this relationship essentially repaired, I guess is the best way to probably put it, so that they don't become your quote-unquote difficult client anymore. So the goal is to find the weakest link, just like within training. If we address the weakest link, then everything else up the chain happens to improve. So the first archetype here is going to be the skeptic, okay? And the skeptic is going to be the person that questions everything that you do. Why are we doing this exercise? Why are we using this rep range? You know, the trainer that I had before you did it a completely different way. you know, on the surface, this feels like disrespect. And I've definitely felt this when people ask me these questions. It's like, well, you hired me, so, you know, you should trust me to do this. This is my profession. This is what I do for a living. I would like to think I have a lot of things figured out at this point after 15 plus years, but you'd be amazed. There's always going to be people that have these questions. And it's usually not that they're trying to disrespect you. The skeptic almost always has a broken task orientation. So when we talk about those three things, they have a broken issue on the task side. They don't yet quite trust the method. Often because someone has either burned them before or because they're an incredibly intelligent individual who needs the why before they'll truly buy into something. And so the mistake that most coaches make here is treating these questions as a personal attack. And the skeptic archetype kind of person is not going to be your enemy. The skeptic person is going to be the client who, once they actually truly do buy in, becomes probably one of your most loyal advocates because they bought in with their eyes open. They question things. You actually could teach them something, and they actually physically now have bought in because now not only do they have the doing, they have the understanding, and then obviously you're going to give them the results, right? So you have that three-pronged approach. They're much easier to be like, man, this is awesome. That's going to be somebody that's going to leave you Google reviews, refer you clients, you know, speak highly of you either on social media, maybe post on social media, right? Those are going to be really good clients in the long term. Maybe a little bit of work, but the biggest issue is that most people see these skeptics as a personal attack, and they are not. All right, the second archetype is going to be what we call the ghost, okay? And the ghost is going to be the person that books sessions and then they disappear. Maybe they cancel last minute. Maybe they skip something that you give them to do on their own, whether it be extra mobility work or nutrition work, or they happen to be a remote client and they're not doing all their training. You know, they happen to disappear for several weeks and then they resurface full of apologizes of what was going on. And coaches read this as laziness or disrespect for their time. And sometimes the real issue is a goals problem, or more precisely, a readiness problem. So you handed an action plan to someone who isn't actually in the action stage of their change yet. And we'll come back to that here later on the episode, because it's one of the most misdiagnosed problems in the entire fitness industry that we have. So you want to take this person as somebody that we can potentially work with, but they could have been somebody that was really ambitious, maybe bought off more than they can chew from the get-go. And it's part of our job to try to help filter those people out. Like I said, we'll talk about that here a little bit later. The third archetype is then going to be the overachiever. And this one feels like a dream client many times until it's not going to be your dream client, right? The overachiever does all the extra things. They're going to add sessions that you didn't program. You're going to do extra work. They're going to add things on the end. You know, they're going to refuse to take their deloads or their down weeks. Or when you say, hey, we're going to do this X, Y, Z, they're going to say, nope, I want to do this. They're going to train through pain or issues. They may brag about it, or they're going to say, hey, you know, I didn't not want to do this. I want to figure out a way to go through it. The difficulty here is that they will run themselves into an injury or into a burnout-based phase in their training while we're actually the ones working with them. And then it's going to be our reputation that they kind of are putting at risk, right? So this is usually a task disagreement in disguise, and they don't believe recovery is part of the actual training stage of how training works, or it's a control need where training is hard, where training hard is the one thing in their life they feel that they truly own, that they're important of and they can take care of that. And so the way we want to handle this overachieving type person is going to be very differently than the person who just doesn't show up, even though both are technically quote unquote non-compliant for what we're programming and how we're working with them and helping them achieve their goals. All right, the fourth archetype here is then going to be the boundary pusher. And so this is going to be the person that's going to text you super late at night. They're going to ask for free programming or discounted programming for a friend, family, or spouse. You know, they're going to want to renegotiate the price every single month or try to ask for some kind of special treatment. They're going to try to turn a 30-minute session into a 40 or 45-minute training session. And here's how we want to flip that, that will save your mental sanity in this career, is that this boundary pushing type individual almost never is a character flaw. It's a contracting failure. So somewhere at the start, the expectations were never set. So the client is just filling the vacuum of what they think they can do and get away with. And people expand to fit the space that you're going to be willing to give them. So as the saying goes, you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. You know, that's not malice. This is, you know, it's just the way that people work. And the fix is not a personality fix here. It's just going to be setting a boundary and being very clear about your boundaries. And then we'll get to that here more in a little minute, but that will solve majority of the problems for this kind of person. The fifth archetype is going to be the person that would be what we like to call the know-it-all. Okay, they seem to know everything. They're going to bring you bro science from a podcast or YouTube. They, you know, maybe just sifted through. You know, they're going to correct your cueing or say that maybe we should do this and not this. You know, they're going to tell you what an influencer said, maybe about fasting cardio or some kind of hypertrophy training. But underneath the friction is usually a relatedness need. They want to feel respected and competent in the room, not talked down to. And when you correct them flatly, you trigger what psychologists call cognitive dissonance, the discomfort of holding a brief, or I'm sorry, the discomfort of holding a I'm chopping on my words here. They're having an issue with discomfort of holding a belief that's being challenged. And people defend against that discomfort by digging in absolutely harder. So the more that we are right, the more that they are going to argue. And we'll fix that with technique, not with being louder. Okay, so this is going to be a very interesting type of person to actually train and work with. And like, we go a little bit deeper here later in the episode. We'll talk about them. But these, in my opinion, can be difficult people to work with. And then the sixth archetype is then going to be the venter. Okay, this is going to be the person that uses their session almost like a therapy appointment. Every set is booked in by, you know, something about their boss or their ex or their week or their, you know, something going wrong or whatever's going wrong in their life, right? All the negative stuff is coming out to you. And you care about them as a person, and you rightfully should. And you should be listening to some degree, absolutely. But now you're maybe 40 minutes into your training session, and you've maybe done two or three actual total working sets. And so this is going to be a bond that's basically gotten lopsided, okay? We want to create this bond with an individual, but it's gotten a little bit too heavy on one side and the other. And the relationship has tilted from the ability of coaching and personal training to basically emotional caretaking. And it feels good to be needed, like, right? It feels good that your clients can trust you to have deep conversations. I'm not going to say that you can't do that. Which is why this is a trap when it comes to our space. And we'll talk about how you can hold the relationship within certain confines that it's professional and still at the same time, you know, helpful to the client. And you can still have these conversations from time to time. But you also want to have your structure of, hey, we're here to actually get work done and work on your physical health as well as your mental health. So there are the six types. And, you know, we've already started sorting how things should be laid out, okay? And you might even think about some certain clients that maybe fall into certain ones. I know that I have whenever I was preparing this episode. And so let's go a little bit deeper, because if you only learn these types of people that we have, we'll still be guessing in how we actually go about fixing things. So I want to make sure that we understand the two underlying ways that we can go about this for all these single clients. And so the first one is going to be focusing on the stages of change. So back in the 80s, there were two researchers, Prochaska and DeClementine, and they mapped out how people actually change behavior. And it's not a switch, it's more like a staircase. People move from not even thinking about change to thinking about it, to preparing, to action, to maintenance. So the single biggest error in our fitness industry is selling action stage solutions to a client who's still in the contemplation stage. So think about what that means for somebody that we would like to call our clients, like the person that ghosts all those sessions or doesn't show up or randomly shows up from here and there. So you happen to hand them, say, a 4 or 5 day training program, and you're helping them maybe with their meals even. And that's an action stage tool, but their head is still in the contemplation side. So they like the idea of being fit and healthy and taking care of themselves, yet they're not committed to the daily cost of what that takes. So they end up not showing up or being very spotty on their attendance, not because they're lazy per se, but because you sold them basically a method that they weren't quite ready to achieve yet. And so when you meet a client at their actual stage, the ghosting of not showing up to their training sessions or whatever usually goes away. So part of this is filtering out where somebody is in these stages and what they actually need. And you can usually tell based off their commitment. You know, if they're really coming back with, negotiations, or they're coming back with issues, or they're saying, you know, I might have this trip going on and I'm waiting for the perfect time, right? They're still contemplating it today. The person that's usually ready to hand over their credit card comes in with a good attitude, ready to go, wanting to start as soon as possible, right? That's the person that you know is ready to go and going to be there. So I don't want to tell you to not take a client, but I think you want to be able to communicate to them, hey, this is what this is going to require. Out of a 1 to 10 scale, how quickly or how ready are you going to be a 9 or a 10 committed to this, what we're going to do? And if they're like, it might be about a month. Okay, well, you're still in contemplation. Okay, so that's when you say, let's tell you what, let's see if we can meet in a week or two again. We'll reassess. We'll see how things go and then go from there. Okay. Or maybe you set up a call if you're working with somebody online, right? All those are important things. Ideally, you want to try to make sure that the people are no longer in contemplation. Now, the second thing here that we're going to talk about is going to be the three basic needs. And this is going to be from the self-determination theory, the work from Ditchie and Ryan. And so their argument, which is supported by a huge body of research, is that human motivation runs on three basic psychological needs. Autonomy, so the need to feel some ownership over what you're actually doing. Competence, the need to feel capable and like you're making progress. And then relatedness, the need to feel connected and respected by the people around you. So now, if you know, if we go back to the six archetypes of people that we might be labeling as the difficult clients, you know, we're going to have somebody like that overachiever, you know, who maybe won't take a deload or a light week or back off when things aren't feeling good. That's autonomy, right? Training is the one place that they feel in control. And so taking a deload or a down week or pulling back because things are aching feels like that you're taking that portion of them away. Now, what about somebody when we talked about like the person who thinks they know it all when it comes to their training, who likes to argue? Now, relatedness and competence, they need to feel respected and capable in the room. And then the person that's ghosting all your sessions and not showing up, who can't commit, usually it's often going to be competence. Deep down, they don't believe they can actually succeed with what's going on. So not trying protects them from failing. And so here's the important key to take away. Difficult behavior is almost always a thwarted need wearing a costume. So the client is trying to make your life hard, or isn't trying to make your life hard, excuse me. They're trying to protect an autonomy, a competence, or relatedness need that they feel is under threat, usually without even knowing it. Okay. It's not like they're personally doing this trying to attack you. It's just the way that they think and the way their behavior is. And everybody is a little bit different upstairs. So they're going to have different ways to combat this and basically balance things out. And so once you see it, you can stop taking it personally. And not taking it personally is 90% of handling it like a professional. So understanding the interactions that we have, they're not coming at you as a person. There could just be some things that we need to try to work around to be able to help them out here. And so now we've got all this down here, we understand some of the psychology and the different archetypes and maybe why people are trying to do the things that they do and just the way they are as people. Okay. You could probably lump me under that. You could probably lump yourself under one of those. You know, this is all useless without a system. So here are five steps that should be able to help you. And step number one is going to be to diagnose before you actually react. And so this is what I would just say, just take a pause. Okay. Take a good deep breath, breathe, relax, pause, think about it. The single highest leverage habit that you can build is going to be the half second gap between the difficult behavior and your response. Okay. How you respond to something. Because your untrained instinct when a client argues or no shows or pushes a boundary is to immediately react. And, you know, you want to maybe defend the program. Maybe you get short. Maybe you feel disrespected. And every one of those reactions is probably going to end up making it worse. So instead, in that moment that we pause, we have a brief break, we want to run through a diagnosis here. You know, we want to ask ourselves mentally, you know, internally, which one of these things had issues? You know, was it the bond? Was it the goal? Or was it the task? And which need is under threat at the moment, their autonomy, their competence, or the relatedness. And you don't need to be right on the first guess. Okay, this isn't like a pop quiz. And if you don't get it right, things aren't going to go well. You just need to be curious about where the disconnect is instead of being defensive. And that one shift alone from reacting to being able to try to figure out what's going on is going to be the entire ballgame of communication between you and your client, especially during difficult times. So you can't do steps 2 through 5 that we've discussed until you've actually done this first step right here. So everything we're talking about after this isn't going to matter until you sit back and reflect. And I do have to give major props to my wife. She is fantastic at being able to do this. This is like her superpower. She's really good at just taking a brief step on things and saying, hey, you know what? Pause. We're going to figure out what's going on. There is a disconnect somewhere. Okay. There's a communication issue somewhere. There's not that you're coming after me and trying to be malicious, and I'm not trying to do anything to hurt you, which I mean, we operate our business on very good integrity and faith, in my opinion. And we're never out to get somebody. We're always trying to do what's best for them at the end of the day. But at the same time, we do have a business to run. Okay. So we do have some boundaries and we have to abide by those, and we have agreements, and, you know, we do our best to uphold by those. So, but again, my wife does a good job at stepping back and pausing. So with any kind of issue, even if it's with a spouse, a friend, or family, if you just pause and think about it, a lot of times that will save you from doing something really dumb. The second step is going to be to roll with the resistance. And this comes straight out of motivational interviewing, the work of Miller and Rolnick, which is the gold standard for helping people change behavior they're ambivalent about. And the core idea is almost the opposite of what feels natural. So when a client pushes back, your instinct is to push back harder with just general logic. And Miller and Rolnick call that the rightening reflex. Okay, the urge to correct, to fix, to win the point of the argument. And here is the catch behind all this, is the righting reflex is actually going to backfire, because every time you argue for change, you force the client into arguing against it. So you literally talk them out of it with your own logic. So instead, you roll with it. Here's what we're going to do. So the skeptic, or the person that's skeptical about what you got going on, says, hey, I heard squats are bad for your knees. Okay, going back to that example we had earlier, you don't launch into a biomechanics lecture here and tell them why that's wrong. You get curious. All right. So we say, hey, tell me where you heard that. What's your concern? And then we're reflecting that back to them. Okay. We're going to actually make them tell them about this. And so you want to get stronger, but your worry we might be trading that for a knee problem down the road. Is that a fair assumption? And so you can notice what just happened here is that we didn't necessarily argue. We made them feel heard. We protected the relatedness need that they have. And now they're not defending a position. They're in a conversation with us. From there, we can actually share the evidence, and then they'll be open to it because you're not trying to win the argument or disagreement. And this one technique, reflecting and getting curious instead of correcting, will diffuse, especially the people that are skeptical about anything that you're doing, and also the people that seem to think they know it all about training. And even some of the overachievers will also respond to this relatively well. People that like to do more than they're supposed to. And so it feels slower in the moment, but is dramatically faster over the life of the relationship that you're going to have with that client. And so the big thing that I try to do with this, especially when it comes to emails, or especially when it comes to like cancellation or saying we don't have time, you know, this is not like I'm trying to sell them or anything, but I'm just generally curious. When you say you don't have time, is the issue that you don't physically have the time on your plate, or that the time is getting difficult to manage and there's a hard way of figuring out how can I manage everything with there still feeling like there's balance on my plate? Because when I work with a lot of kids and a lot of parents, we got to think those parents are not only getting their kids ready for school and then taking them to school and then going to work and then probably getting them up from school or taking them to sport practices and then coming to us. Where are those parents, you know, and then they've got to take care of dinner, you know, baby laundry, all the household stuff, you know, where they're looking at it is that time has shrunk. Okay. Where am I going to get the time? And the question is, how can they optimize their time? But again, we want to make sure that we have that conversation that's letting them know that they're heard. We understand that time is tough, but do you understand that if there's a way that you can only get them in one time a week, we can continue to make progress and build on their performance and what have you? Are you sure there's not a way that we can't help you find a way to get in here one time a week? Okay. You know, you try to make sure that you understand, especially with me as a parent now, it's much easier to make that relationship. Before I was a parent, it was a little hard for people to probably buy into me saying that. But now I clearly balance a business, a wife, a child, and everything else that I have going on in my life. So people seem to believe that it's more possible. So anyways, just make sure that they feel hurt. All right, the third step here is going to be to reset the expectation. And the expectation conversation for us, and I think this is the one that most coaches end up skipping, which is exactly why we end up staying frustrated. So we, remember when we talked about the person that, you know, we called more of like the boundary pusher, somebody's going to test your limits and how they're going to see how much you can give them. Remember that the issue is almost always a contracting failure. The expectations were probably never set. Step three is where we are going to fix that. And you can fix it at any point during the relationship, not just at the start, although in my opinion, I think setting it from the start is going to be much easier. The expectation conversation has a very simple structure. You name what you've noticed without the blame. So you restate the shared goal and you propose the new agreement, which is how it sounds. Hey, I noticed our sessions have been starting 15 minutes late, maybe the last couple of weeks. I want to make sure that you get the full hour that you're paying for and the results that you came here to get with me. So going forward, let's both protect that and start time. And here's how I'd like to handle it. Okay. There's no guilt. There's no passive aggression there. You corrected the boundary to their goal. And that's going to be the magic move here as to how it's going to relate to them, as that limit being something that's serving them and giving them the most bang for their buck, not necessarily us. And the same structure works for the late night texts or messages. You know, anything that's going to come to that when it comes to like renegotiating prices or anything like that. And so you're not trying to be difficult back. You're just recontracting it. You're out doing it out loud and you're sounding like a professional. And when it comes to that, I think just having the expectations set and why you do stuff, you know, try to make sure people understand that you are a human being as well. And so when people constantly abuse your time or your energy, it really starts to wane on you. And so if you can reframe that, hey, it's like, it's not that I don't want to do this. I want to be able to give you the best me that I can, right? You pay X amount of money for me every single session or month or however you do your billing. I want you to make sure that you're getting above and beyond that, right? I don't want you to feel like you're getting shortchanged from me from a time perspective or a monetary perspective. So if you can reset the expectation to something that they understand and they understand it's benefit for them, then usually I would say they're probably going to be okay with that. All right. The fourth one are going to be boundaries that are actually going to build respect between us. And there's a fear sitting underneath everything that we've talked about here today. And I want to talk about it because that's the reason the coaches let difficult behavior slide for a long period of time. And the fear is, if I set a boundary, I'm going to lose this client. And let me say this as clearly as I possibly can. Boundaries do not cost you respect. The absence of boundaries are going to cost you the respect. So think about the professionals or the people that you respect the most. You know, your doctor, maybe an accountant, a mentor. They all have very clear boundaries, and you respect them more for it and not for less. Boundaries communicate that your time has an actual value and that the process has integrity and that you are a professional running a business practice. You do this for a living, right? Not a friend doing favors. And so the coach with no boundaries doesn't read as being something that's generous. They read as someone whose time is worthless and the clients treat them exactly that way in return. So set the obvious ones here in advance in writing where you absolutely can when it comes to your contract agreements or your paperwork, what have you, right? You want response windows. So the midnight text gets answered during your stated hours. You're not going to answer it at midnight. Your scope. So can you write something for my wife? Gets a warm, absolutely. Here's how we set up her as a client, right? You let them know this is how things go. Now I'm just going to do it for no reason. The individual session boundaries. So the person that's constantly talking to you about what's going on in their life, you know, can get a real couple minutes of connection, but then a very straightforward, hey, let's kind of keep working on our training session and we can talk during the rest. Right? The boundaries aren't walls that you're putting up against your clients saying you can't do this. They're just going to be there. That is essentially going to let things fall into a place where you can say, hey, this is the way things are. out of respect for my time, I can't do that, or however you want to professionally word it. But you really want to make sure that when they're having issues, you have those backdrops to be able to fall on when it comes to the way your business runs. And I will tell you, I think me and Adrian have done, since we've had a kid, we've gotten a lot better about our boundaries of how our business runs. And nobody has complained, right? We shortened our hours up. Nobody really said anything. We got rid of our hold policy. Not a single person sent an email being nasty about it. Everyone was just like, you know what? Brandon and Adrian work really hard 52 weeks out of the year. If they happen to go on a vacation 2 weeks of those year, like everybody else has got a full-time job so they can relax and whatever, and they're willing to let me still make the sessions up, I'm okay with that, right? Or our no-show policy, and it bills them the money for their no-show, or their late cancellation, or if you call trying to schedule and the time slot's already, you know, closed off, no, we don't let you come in, right? We've gotten a lot more stern about those things. And initially, we think people are going to be pissed off at us for not being flexible. But the only people that have ever been pissed off have been the people that probably just were not a good fit. And while this episode is about difficult clients, there are people that will be not good fits. That's just the way business works, and that's okay. There's other people out there for those people. But going back to what I'm saying, we've gotten a lot more stringent on our boundaries over the years. From a personal perspective, and I do feel that they have not hurt us from a business perspective. All right, the fifth step here is when to actually fire your client. Because I promised you a complete way to go about this here, not going to be necessarily like this fantasy land where every single relationship is salvageable. So I phased into this very nicely, because some clients you do just have to let go. But notice that we got here at the very end of the episode. And I did this on purpose because firing is the move you reach for after diagnosis and a real attempt, not instead of them, for example. So here is going to be the clean way to go about this. Difficulty is not a reason to fire somebody. Difficulty is just an unmet need that we need to try to figure out. And that's coachable, okay? That is completely coachable. What's not coachable is going to be a genuine reason to end the relationship, and it comes down to three red flags. One is going to be disrespect or abuse of both you or your staff, okay? If there's any kind of like yelling, cussing, negative visual or phone call or, you know, email, nasty email or whatever, that is unacceptable, okay? You run a business, and we are always trying to serve the best that we can. And you're going to have parents, and you're going to have, especially with kids, you're definitely going to have parents, adults, you're going to have individuals. It's very rare, but they just lose their shit without saying anything. And those are the people you just got to get let go, right? That's not difficulty of working with somebody. You know, that's a character issue. And you do not have to tolerate it for any amount of money. Okay, do not let somebody try to bully you around with money and treat you like shit. Do not do that. Number two is repeated non-payment after you've addressed it directly. So you run a business, okay? This is not a charity. They're not donating their money. If they have contract agreements, right, they have to pay. And you should have late fees installed and failed payment fee things installed. And you know, I'm thinking of some people individually now that have had issues in the past, and it's going to happen. And they have to have a serious conversation. If you have to constantly have to chase people down, that's probably not going to be a good client at the end of the day. Now, some people have some weird stuff going on, but usually if people are hesitant about that, that's somebody else that you're going to probably want to try to avoid if it becomes a really big headache. The number three is going to be a safety or ethical conflict. A client who demands programming that you know is dangerous or unhealthy, or is pushing you to try to do something that's unethical. Think about things like in our space when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs or illegal supplementation and things like that, right? You are not obligated to do that kind of stuff. Do not feel that you have to do that stuff. That's unethical. Do not go down those boundaries. Those three, you let go professionally and without guilt. Do not have any guilt for those issues of moving on, especially the one when people are just going to treat you like shit, okay? It's just not worth it. I've realized it's not worth it. You know, you just be as professional as you can. You know, we've had several of those over the 8 years that we've been in business. Maybe I shouldn't say several. We've had a handful. don't miss any of them, not even a little bit. You know, if anything, they become stories that we talk to interns about, speak to universities about. And I think it's good to paint that picture, because some people think it's all just pretty cherries and roses and flowers and everything goes great, and that's not how it works. So everything outside of those three lines, though, you know, people that are being skeptical, people that are just kind of no-showing here and there, people that are trying to be those overachievers, right? The people that are trying to test your boundaries, people that think they know it all, people that are constantly venting to you about their life and what's going on, you know, those are not hireable clients, okay? Those are technically part of our job, is to figure out how to communicate with those people better. And those are going to be the communication reps that are going to make you a really, really good coach, not just somebody that writes training program and sends somebody on their way. So let me leave you here with a way that we can tie this all together. Anders Ericsson spent his career studying expertise, and his big finding was that mastery doesn't come from easy repetition. It comes from the deliberate practice, the deliberate, slightly uncomfortable reps at the edge of our ability. And here's what this is going to mean for us, if you're listening to this episode, is that your difficult clients are not the obstacle to becoming a great coach. They are the deliberate practice. They are the repetitions that are hard, but they are going to make you a really good coach. The coach who only ever works with the easy, compliant clients is going to be the coach who never actually gets good at the hardest, most valuable skill in this field, and that's going to be good quality communication. That's what makes a great coach, is communication. And so here's a way that I would like to challenge you over the next several weeks. Take your single most difficult client that you happen to have, or if you happen to not be a coach, maybe an employee or, you know, fellow employee, spouse, what have you, and who's been giving you a lot of issues. And whenever we've got this episode, there's probably somebody, one or two people that you're thinking of. Okay, I'm sure there has to be. There's one or two that I'm thinking of too. And I don't want you to put that label on them. I want you to run through everything we talked about here today and try to figure out what's going on. You know, which three-pronged approaches needs addressed for this individual, right? You need to work on your bond. Do you need to work on your goal with them, or do you need to work on the task? And then which of their needs is going to be under threat? Which one are they feeling that you're threatening? Is it their autonomy? Is it going to be their competence, or is it going to be the relatedness? And then have one expectation conversation. Just one. Name what you've noticed, restate what their goals are, how you're trying to help them get from where they are now to their goals in point B, and then propose how you're going to help them do that, and how that you have their best interest in mind, and how you can connect those dots. And then you will see how that communication gets a lot better. And this can reframe how you look at every single client that you work with, especially when you have any kind of hiccups. It's done wonders for how I've tried to communicate with clients in terms of figuring what the issues are and how we can address those and being able to have a good quality conversation and let them know that my job at the end of the day is to help them. You know, I'm not trying to be a hard guy or a harsh critic or the person that's making things more difficult for them. I'm just trying to steer them in the right direction, the best way I know. And so maybe there's some kind of communication issue that I want clarified. And if you happen to think that this episode could be beneficial for anybody else, it'd be awesome if you happen to send it to somebody who could actually use it. That's how I try to grow the show here. And I think it's the best thank you that you can give me, that I really would appreciate if that episode happens to help you out in any way, shape, or form. And for any of the research that I happen to mention to help drive this episode, they're always going to be in the show notes and or the description of YouTube if you want to check them out to try to find some more of those little highlights and goodies. I always make sure I put those down there from where I got some of my information. And if you haven't done so already, do me a favor, you can hit that follow button and or the subscribe button over on YouTube. You can leave a comment. You can leave a 5-star rating. I think you can comment now over on Spotify. All those things are great. They all really help the channel out. I really appreciate it. So thanks again for tuning in for today's episode, and I'll make sure I see you at the next one. Thanks for listening to Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science.
You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at bsmitley or at teamthirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.